Welcome to Ear Biscuits. I'm Link.
And I'm Rhett. Right now at the table of dim lighting, we've got Mr. Steve Pink. We usually don't do this. We usually don't start with our guest, but we're in what is called a time crunch. And so we are just hitting the ground running. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you.
The director of Buddy System Season 2.
Yeah. Wow.
Thanks for having me.
And we just wrapped, man.
I know, just the
like
other day.
Like we freaking just wrapped just a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
And we literally just walked off of the photo shoot. They call it the key art photo shoot.
Yeah.
Link is still in character?
Yeah, I haven't changed back into Link. I'm still just Link. I'm Buddy System Season 2 Link.
Right.
Which is kind of that's the Link that you know.
That's the Link
like,
I know.
You pretty much know a Link with a mustache.
That's all I know.
So when I shave this thing off,
we're gonna be complete strangers.
And then we're gonna be strangers. and we go to the wrap party, everyone's just gonna be talking about how I look different. I might not shave the mustache till after that, because I don't want that to be the thing I have to talk to everybody about.
Right.
Wow, you don't look as good without the mustache. That's not what I wanna hear.
Right, well, they might not say, they could just go, it could be slightly worse because it would be more generic. Like they might just say, you shaved off your mustache.
Right, no comment.
Oh, hey.
Again and again and again.
You shaved off your mustache.
Like a conversation.
Yeah, because they don't know what to say. They can't. Right. They can neither say, and it looks worse, and if they say, and it looks so much, well, some people might say, and you look great, but then that also implies
I've been looking horrible.
Right.
So for this whole show.
It does give people something to talk about.
Which I know I have.
But it gives people something to talk about, which I think is good. I think giving people something to talk about is a good thing for a party. I'm personally, as soon as we finish this, I'm going to a doctor's appointment because I'm trying to figure out what's going on with my throat. I think it's just stress. I think we just overworked ourselves.
Yes.
And I think I'm coming down from it. But I'm going to see a professional before we leave to go to New York just to make sure that everything's okay. But I'm afraid of like party talk. Mm-hmm. I'm afraid that I'm gonna go to party, have a party talk situation and lose my voice.
Yeah,
if you shave your mustache, all the attention will be on you and I won't have to talk about anything and people just come to me and I just point at your face. So I think you should shave it. That's my personal opinion.
Which ironically, we've gotten very good at that.
Pointing at each other?
From not speaking and communicating.
Mm.
Not right. that is a major part of a buddy system episode.
I'm also gonna take my headphones off now.
So you don't need them, you're saying?
That doesn't mean I'm disengaging from the conversation. It just means, I like what you got going with the hat and the headphones, but mine is not really sitting really well for me, so.
Mine are kind of drawing my ears back in a weird way.
So you don't want it either?
I'm gonna try taking them off now.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, you should.
Well.
Now that you know how it sounds, and now you can be the, you
now
can
I'm in charge
it.
Of like keeping you guys on mic.
Not necessarily.
You can't self-regulate anymore. You'll be back here and no one will know that you're just being.
Can we come up with a hand signal that you can unleash?
Yeah, like.
Bring
this.
It in.
Bring it
this?
In.
Okay, it looks like
bring it.
Counting money is what it looks like.
That's right, because I get paid every time I tell you to bring it in. I just thought it would be, it's funny. We didn't have that many times, that many windows of opportunity to have like, to just talk. When we were on set, because so we can talk about that, but there were just certain moments when we'd have like this flash in the conversational pan with Steve Pink.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where I would,
very
where
I'd, quick.
I'd
very,
learn
quick
something,
tidbits.
Learn something about the guy and be like, we gotta podcast that up. And then we gave you no way out because we ask you in front of everybody, like right before you're like, all right, is everybody set? You're about to call action. And we're like, will you come on our podcast?
Yeah,
So we didn't give you any out.
You didn't. Although we were talking about
except
this.
Except the word no.
Yeah, I have said no in front of everyone? I don't think I have that kind of courage.
That would have been a bold move.
Yeah.
And that would have been like, that would have been a great set story for the whole crew.
Yeah.
You got to listen this one time. I had these two guys making this show and they asked the director to be on their podcast and he said, no, just remember.
And immediately afterward, action. no, action.
No, I don't do that.
Great.
Oh man. Yeah, well, that's, I perhaps should have done that,
No,
because
I've
been traumatized ever. Well, because I was saying like, I'd love to be on their podcast. And then I've, I've had an anxiety attack ever since that moment.
I was talking
to my wife, like, why would I do that? Why would I be on a podcast? Because, there are other people who I recognize.
But it's so dimly lit,
good at it,
Steve.
I do like that. And this is properly shaded.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
right?
Perfectly.
So I feel like there's something, there's some protection in that as well.
And Rhett is with you. Is that why you wore your hat? Because you knew Steve was going to wear his hat?
Yeah. Definitely.
I don't even own one of these hats.
The reason I wore my hat is because I've got this going on, which once you take my man bun off, it's like cutting my testicles off. You know, it's like then I've just got this weird eunuch cut.
So you're telling me that in normal life, in your normal look, you don't have testicles?
Right.
I agree.
No, when my hair goes up, it's like, I don't want to keep going with a phallic analogy, but it's,
don't.
Like, it's like a penis.
Well, take
it's
it
like
back
a lot
off.
Of penises.
Take it back off one more time and just look at Steve. It's the back is, look even further, look past Steve. There's a thing happening for
call
you.
Call that my ducktail.
For you audio only listeners, which are the superior version of this show, you're not missing anything except some weird back head hair situation.
Back head hair situation.
I remember we talked about in one break. We didn't have a lot of breaks. I don't want to complain about our about the nature of our show, but I'm sure the three of us could sit down and commiserate forever about how hard we worked.
We could.
But it was a pleasure working so hard for you and alongside you.
Thanks, likewise.
But at one point, we were talking about the classic question of if you're stranded on a deserted island,
mm-hmm.
or if there's desert there, it's a desert island. and you can only take an unlimited supply of one particular food, what would it be? I don't know if that's the classic question, but mm-hmm. that's the one you answered.
Yeah.
And that's the one I cared about.
But you had two.
You weren't there.
I insisted on two. I know this answer very well because I insist on two for some reason, which breaks the rule of the game right away. Like right off the bat, it makes the game less challenging.
And before you answer it, the thing that I loved about it, and the thing that one of the many things I love about Steve that I could tell when we talked, it came up in conversation. But it wasn't like I just posed the question to you and you thought of an answer. No, this was something you had thought about previously. This is something you were pitching to us.
Maybe.
Which with all the pitching we do to other people and like stumping people, I really enjoy it when someone's really thought about something thoroughly and then they bring it up and we get put on the spot.
Hmm.
But give us your answer now that I've built it up as being so well thought out.
Well, like... Well, like I said, I cheat the moment I propose the idea, right? The concept.
Only
right?
One thing.
Right. Yeah. You can only have one thing. If you could only eat one, I guess, type of food, a category of food on a desert island, you were on a desert island and you only had one category of food to eat for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
What would it be?
Like, would it be cereal for me just because I love cereal?
Right, and that's it. You get cereal and milk, and that's it. You're, you know, for the rest of your life on a desert island. And so
I love peanut butter. Could it just be peanut butter?
Could it
be peanut butter spread upon anything that I could spread it upon?
Sure, sure. But then you couldn't change it, right? So if you went, you know, with a graham cracker, that's it. Although, like I said, since I cheat almost like the moment I propose the game, then I think you could probably have not only any type of cracker, but you could also have maybe a different kind of peanut butter or even an almond butter.
Really? What about a buffet? Is a buffet a category of food?
See, Well, I get, you know, for in some buffets, sure, because there's some buffets which are just that thing that everyone's like cottage cheese, like canned fruit, salad.
Mine would be like the biggest, like Golden Corral, like everything.
Right.
I'd have access
to a Golden
Corral.
That's not, can you take a restaurant to a deserted island? What restaurant would you open on a deserted island?
Golden Corral.
Do you even know what a Golden Corral is?
I do only because I went to one for the first time this year, actually. I went to one and I was both, you know, judgmental and, you know, and snobby and superior about it and then massively enjoyed it.
Yeah,
like, this is one of the best experiences of my life.
Yeah, but you can't do it on there are people that we know from back home in North Carolina who could go multiple times a week. I mean, I can go once a year to a Golden Corral and then Golden Corral out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's not a good answer because I'd have to eat it every day on this island.
Right, that would be it. That would be it. So even that's the thing. That's the kind of tricky and fun thing about the game, because even when you say, okay, I'm going to cheat and have all this variety as my answer to the game, once you start to really consider it, then you feel limited by it.
Right.
Even Golden Corral, suddenly it's not enough options. Mm. Right?
Yeah.
It's interesting.
You can't escape the dark heart of humanity.
I still don't know your answer.
Mine is sushi and cheeseburgers.
Oh, well, okay.
Right, because I want sushi. I want the fine, you know, because I like the freshness of, you know, finely cut raw fish. Is that how you say it?
Finely,
sushi cut fish. with rice, and then there's all the fun, you know, kind of rice and fish combos that sushi provides, and then I'd be like, oh, I'm really still hungry. I want something greasy and
a guilty
Filling. A guilty pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah.
I don't want to be so refined. I want just some. I want a cheeseburger and fries and a Coke. So
though? Because I mean, I'm cracking open a whole other can here. But I mean, if you're gonna have only one cheeseburger, you should probably choose where it's from to make sure it's exactly how you want it.
And that's
where would that be?
That's a whole thing in and of itself, which has emerged as a more difficult question to answer over the last few years, right? Yeah. With the craft burger or whatever call it.
Right, like you have to pick your category.
So you don't know, but do you have that answer?
You know what? I would say whatever they dropped off the C-130, like if there was a plane that dropped it off, you know what I mean? Like,
but if you could choose.
If I could choose.
I mean, would it be In-N-Out? Would it be the Steak and Shake?
That would be my...
Shake Shack?
I haven't had a Shake Shack. Is that all it's cracked up to be?
Mm. It's been a long time since I had one. I remember enjoying it.
It got... Lily went with a friend the other day, and she came back with a magnanimous report.
She did.
Where do they have one?
Glendale, homie.
Oh.
I would probably default to In-N-Out, but... I would like to reserve my right to taste Shake Shack and then revise my answer. Right?
I love a good cheeseburger.
I think I do Five Guys.
You would think, and a lot of people would say pizza because you might shift what's on the pizza and you're like, you got Hawaiian pizza.
If you're talking about that category and you won't let me do Golden Corral Buffet, pizza is the one I would choose because you've got
a lot of loopholes with the pizza.
Yeah, you got a lot of food groups in one.
Same question.
I will point out with the sushi that, I mean, you can probably just swim off your deserted island and like hand spear a fish and, I mean, that's pretty much sushi.
Yeah.
It's gonna ruin a little bit that there are all these fish swimming around you and you're just eating raw fish.
Right.
Being delivered by a plane.
Right, I'm unnecessarily giving away a category.
Yeah,
right. Because I could say pizza and cheeseburgers and then secretly be like, and I'm going to catch some raw fish and eat it.
It's right. It's almost like saying, I would like on my deserted island to eat just sand sandwiches. You know? Then you realize, oh, that was a little bit short-sighted on my part.
Right.
As intrigued as I am by this conversation, I do think we do need to talk about buddy systems some, really, right?
Let's do it.
But before we do that, we need to
show a little love to our sponsor, which this week is Mack Weldon. Mack Weldon believes in smart design, premium fabrics, and simple shopping. I went on the site and I started shopping for the stuff that I wanted, and I got excited even before it came to me, and I started wearing it because they have the smartest, most well thought out approach to comfortable clothing. So I started racking up on shorts, workout shorts, swim trunks, sweatpants, and lounge pants, not to mention underwear and socks. I love the way that it's very clear that they've thought about all of the details. They've got naturally antimicrobial clothes. Not that I've got like microbes all over me, but I do. So they eliminate odor. Even the pockets. I'm talking about like, all right, if I wanna know that there's pockets in the right place at the right depth on my lounge pants. Because lounging is important to me when I'm in the pants. So I'm very excited to wear my lounge pants from Mack Weldon. You need to check them out. We've got a deal for you. Go to mackweldon.com and get 20% off using promo code BISCUITS. Again, that's promo code BISCUITS at mackweldon.com. Gets you 20% off. You can get those shorts, you can get those underwears, you can get those swim trunks, sweatpants, lounge pants like me. Do it. Now back to the biscuit.
So I remember the first conversation that we had, right? We had a meeting, it was right in here in this room over here in our office.
Because we had to decide who's gonna direct our, you know, our baby.
Yeah, and we wanted to have a meeting with you for season one, but you were unavailable on another project at the time. And so, and then your name came back up and we're like, oh, he'll never do it. He'll never do it, but we should at least have the meeting with him. So we had that meeting, and then I remember you didn't, a lot of people, you know, you have a meeting with them and you can kind of tell that they did the, like, you know, the 20-minute skim before the meeting to kind of know how to talk about what they're about to talk about. But correct me if I'm wrong, you had watched the entire first season.
I watched the first season, yep.
Yeah.
I watched the first season and I read-
And beyond.
Well-
You'd watch other stuff too.
Yeah, and then videos and some sketches. Just, then it was random, right? I watched the first season and I was like, what else is all these cats about? You know, and so mm-hmm. then I just random video or sketch. So I did, you know, I just logged time because I couldn't, after a while I couldn't figure out like what logical order to watch things in. So I would just watch videos because I remember saying to you like, yeah. Oh, that was awesome. And you're like, that was 6 years ago. And I was like, oh. All right. Yeah. Okay. So you know. So some things I watch. And you're like,
ashamed of that.
It was like, yeah, we don't do that anymore. So I watched some older stuff and some newer stuff, and then you know, and then read the wiki. That's when we
wiki
talked about
is
portmanteau.
Yes.
Is that
yes.
how you say it? Portmanteau. Remember?
Wiki is extensive, man. That thing is out of control.
Yeah, I read the whole.
I don't remember the portmanteau.
The whole thing starts with that.
Yeah, someone should look it up. And first of all, I'm not sure I'm saying that word correctly. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right. But
entertainment.
It says you're a portmanteau of .. Uh-huh. Yeah, and I was surprised. I was like, I don't know what that word is really. And
entertainers. It means putting two words together, right?
Is that right? I think I probably looked it up prior to that meeting, but have since forgotten.
I do that a lot.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask you.
But you had an assessment.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing that I think it's hard to assess yourself. And when it comes to Buddy System season one, I mean, honestly, one of the things we were disappointed with was it didn't get enough attention from, I'm not saying we wanted like critical attention, but I guess I am saying that. I was very curious what if someone who is critical for a living assessed our show, what they would say about it. And I would say that when you came in, you gave your take on it, and it was very, I guess I enjoyed it. I enjoyed having someone that I respected their work who took the time to look at our stuff and then had thoughts about it, and who you assessed our style in a way that like when you're in it and you live it and you just make it up as you go along and you find yourself creating stuff that you can never step out of yourself and assess mm-hmm. what you really think of what you've done. So it's nice when someone that you respect that you don't know, I mean, you could have said anything that could have been lip service, but I could tell that like you had actual thoughts about it and we really appreciated that. And you had good ideas to build upon it.
And I probably mustered all that I could, you know, muster. For that meeting, I was like, "Oh, these are all the good
ideas."
Well,
it was plenty for us.
I put them together in a half hour and hope I.
Because it's a lot to it's a lot to decide in one like 30-minute meeting. It's like, okay, are we're gonna get in bed together, creatively?
I don't remember. Well, I wasn't there for that either.
Creatively, it's quite a commitment.
Talking about what you're going to enjoy a director. On a desert island and sleeping together, and I'm just out in the cold.
I guess it's a commitment the other way too, and which would explain why you actually watched our stuff. You don't want to just jump into a creative bed with. Somebody with two guys and then have to make their thing or direct it, you know? It could be really bad.
Well,
in terms of the situation.
It could be bad, but I mean, I think beyond, you know, whether, you know, well, yeah, I guess I wouldn't go to the meeting if I was like, it's not creatively my thing, but also then, you know, I'm always like, I always feel like we try to avoid a situation where you want to kill the people you're working with. And if you don't like their stuff and they don't like what you're about, then you're just going to try and kill each other for most of the time you're together.
Right.
Which beyond the creative process is just not a wise choice, you know.
Right.
But I feel like, and maybe you can tell me what you feel. I felt like it was always trying to be deeply funny without trying too hard and also be deeply interesting. Which mm-hmm. is a tough combination. Like there's plenty of stuff that's just so funny and you just get it. You know, it's just, you know, mm-hmm. and a lot of the stuff that we did this season and that you do is just kind of like readily hilarious. But then there are other things that are readily hilarious and also something that you have to really kind of, you know, absorb. When you absorb, find that there's other kind of levels to it. And that was what I liked most. I was like, you guys are trying to figure something out. I don't always know what it is, but you like the ideas and you want to explore
what
they are.
Well, it's funny because we, you know, I kind of have, I'm of two minds about this because there's the like, there's the thing that I want to believe, which is like, I think this is a legitimately original approach to comedy this is an original, like we like to maintain a sense of originality and not have anybody be too, not be too referential. I mean, nothing, you know, everything's remixed, of course, but to not be able to just have people point out, you guys are just like this or just like that, or you're a combination of this or that, so that there's a sense of originality. But then I think that there's this other part of my mind, and I'm sure Link has the same thought, which is just like, when are people gonna figure out that we're just posers? You know, I think every professional in entertainment business feels that way.
You're feel like I'm posing right now.
Right, exactly. You're like, when are they gonna figure out that I don't have any idea what I'm doing? Or we kind of felt that our entire career. It's like, when are they gonna figure out that we actually are just really good at making you think that we know what we're doing? Right, well, but I think that's
Which is what I'm saying when Steve came in with like a very intellectual assessment, like you really thought about the way that we had made the stuff we had made, and I was like, oh, we fooled him, so that we're doing
we
the right thing.
We can fool other people too.
No, I mean, like specifically, I remember you made an observation of something about how we would choose to make left turns in things. I can't remember exactly what you thought of it. Maybe you remember,
yeah,
but it resonated with us. It was like, well, we never thought about it that way, but yeah, we do try to do that.
Yeah, like the commitment to a deep dive digression, I guess is how I would
say
it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Sounds kind of cool. But that is just kind of an area of comedy that I've always been interested in. And people have done in the past, and when I was super little, that the things that I thought was what made me laugh beyond the jokes, like you'd see a scene and it's really funny and then you'd laugh. And then the scene would take you to another place which would not only make you laugh, but you'd realize you were going down some rabbit hole of the comedy you just enjoyed. And now you're being forced to enjoy it on another level and then on another level, all within the same laugh, kind of. So like Monty Python did that. There was like a famous pet store sketch where John Cleese goes into a pet store and says, I think it's to Michael Palin, that his parrot's dead, and it's demonstrably dead. You know, it's just like a stiff parrot, like stuffed parrot. And he bangs it on the counter and, you know, is trying to convince the pet store owner that the parrot's dead, and the pet store owner refuses to believe it's dead because he doesn't want to give the guy a refund.
Right.
And that, at the end of that sketch, turns into a song, because I believe, and my memory is vague on this because it's been a long time, but I believe the pet store tries to sell him in return, instead of giving him a refund, a half a bee. Like literally a half a bee.
A half of a honeybee?
A half of like a honeybee. Which turns in yeah, half a bee. Which turns into a song entitled Eric the Half a Bee.
Because which he took home? I think that's the point.
Yeah, and I don't
remember.
You're asking
the question, because at that point, it's a song about a half a bee named Eric?
Eric the Half a Bee, I believe. And it's, you know, all the people listening to this can check my facts on this, because it's been, I mean, I was 8 years old or 9 years old. So, but that's just what I remember. Now, they could have been totally two different sketches, and I put it in my head as something that was connected.
Hopefully not.
Yeah, hopefully not. When I saw your work and I saw that you would, you know, take these left turns and then go down that road as far as possible, leaving behind anything you might have set up to begin with, to me was just, you know, great.
Right, like
funny.
The belly button song. I don't even know if you watched that one, but yeah, I don't know why we did it, but it was like, all right, if we're gonna add a second verse of this song about two guys discovering in their late 30s that they have belly buttons for the first time, if we're gonna continue that song through a second verse, well, something else needs to happen, which involves selling coal plants door to door to children.
Right.
And I don't, you know, it's like if you look at point A and point B, it's like, how on earth could this happen? But it's like, you know, okay, we got them along for the ride as long as they don't click away. Mm-hmm. So it's weird how I think there's two factors that brought us there. It was one, you don't want people to click away. So you can't retread, you can't sing a chorus again. The chorus has to be new lyrics every time. But then also, I don't like knowing that the audience feels like
they know where this is going.
They know where this is going, and then it does.
Mm-hmm.
I like them expecting it to go somewhere, and then it never does.
And I think that's true of hopefully every episode.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
Of season two, it's just like that opening scene is not really going to be. I don't know how you could figure out what the closing scene is going to be based on the opening scene. There's even with the setup, you don't really know what the overall punchline is going to be. But
just to close the loop on that, this was the conversation we were having the first time we met. It was like, okay, yeah. But then you started talking about a movie that was like a digression.
Well, I want to talk about that in a second.
Right,
but okay. Specifically with this, because back to that same conversation.
Mm-hmm.
one of the things you said that we didn't realize, again, having somebody that you respect and who has done a lot of work in this field that we kind of feel like, again, like we're kind of like posing our way into. And I think that's a that's how anybody who's kind of come up on YouTube feels, because there still is this, from a critical standpoint and sort of industry standpoint, there is this, is this actually legitimate? You know, there's still this struggle for legitimacy. But when you analyzed it and you said, you take these left turns, but your characters are always kind of just like shrugging those left turns off. You never make a big deal out of it. It's like you face this thing without any sort of fanfare at all. It just seems like, oh, this is natural that we would suddenly be here and this is where we would be going. And I think that there's a number of reasons, mostly just instinct, and it's unintentional that we did. I think most of it was just like, oh, we just think this is really funny and it'll be, it wasn't really well thought out to be like, oh, and then when we go there, we won't have much of a reaction to it.
We thought hard about it, but it wasn't, I don't know that that was calculated.
Yeah, that particular element wasn't calculated. But then we go back and look at everything we've done, we're like, oh, you're right, we always approach things in that way.
The gloss over the absurd.
Right, the characters aren't fazed by the increasing absurdities that you surround yourself with.
Right.
Or any increasingly absurd situation you put yourself in doesn't necessarily, you know, correspondingly affect your character in some way. Like, you're willing to accept the new circumstance, like instantaneously.
Yeah,
right?
And we always want that new circumstance to come from a relatable circumstance, which I think that, which is what, Link, you were about to talk about, which is when you began to tell the story about, what is the movie?
The Discreet Charm of the Bourgeoisie.
Yes.
Like Louis Buñuel, yeah.
And you just, because you were talking about left turns and
that
and
has
you,
some of the greatest left turns in movies ever. And I was amazed when I saw that movie again. I don't know what I was doing watching this movie when I was, you know, I guess in high school. So by that time I was like, oh, I want to be cool and intellectual. So I'm going to watch it, cool and intellectual things that are above my, you know, intellectual abilities.
What was the digression?
It's about this kind of, like this aristocracy of characters, like these, this, like, I think they're related in some way. I think there's a husband and wife, but this collection of aristocrats who go on this crazy journey, and there's these constant digressions. Like, I think the one I told you about was when, once again, I hope my memory serves me correctly, because I'm sure now that I'm saying it out loud on a podcast, someone's going to go, it's not even right. Which is actually okay with me too, I guess, because if that's what I've...
It only matters what we think.
Well, what the application was.
Yeah, what the application was. But I think they're at dinner, and some waiter comes up and starts telling them a story. And, you know, you cut away to that waiter's story, and you think, okay, this is going to be like a 2-minute story, and it's going to have a little beginning, middle, and end, and then he's going to, you know, we're going to cut back to our main characters. But you don't for like, it seemed like a half hour.
Uh-huh.
Like, to the point where you're in another journey entirely, And then I was kind of shocked when we returned to the restaurant.
Right.
Where the waiter says, oh, and thank you for listening to my story, and walks off to take their order, and then you're back with our main character.
And when you told us that story, we don't even have to communicate about things like this. Like, we know we love that kind of thing. So when you're telling that story, we're both already thinking, okay, that's happening in an episode. And when you're dealing with a 22-minute comedy, we're basically already thinking, okay, so we're gonna have an episode where someone's story becomes the episode, and that's where the whole
right
episode, you know, right.
The Lucy
episode
the
six.
Lucy episode
episode six
episode right. six came from, which is, I don't know, you know, and we haven't seen any post, we haven't been in the editing bay yet. So
well, actually, we saw a little sequence of that one because we didn't know if we needed to pick up a shot.
Right.
That is
preemptively my favorite episode, but I don't, you know, I'm withholding judgment at this point.
I know it's
and we didn't need to pick up the shot.
No. I didn't think so.
So there we go. We saw that thing. Right. You didn't see it. You didn't see the little sequence either.
No, but
you didn't?
I didn't.
Pretty exciting.
It's kind of rude of me not to show you.
But when I heard that everyone was happy with it, I was like, well, I'm not going to care. and then the other similar idea that we had, which was, can we do an episode where we don't speak to each other? And when we told Michael and Sievert that, Michael and Sievert, who were our head writers on the show and showrunners and kind of along with us ran the writer's room, you could kind of see the fear in their eyes when we said we want to do an episode where we don't speak to each other. And of course, it's not necessarily completely not speaking to each other, but it takes not speaking to each other about as far as you can take it.
Yeah, in both cases. Like, it becomes many things.
Right.
And
it
right,
does.
It becomes it, many, many things.
It actually became many things that we then had to rewrite because they were too many things.
Yeah, and then right, it's true.
You and Stevie busted it and you were like, guys, act three, that whole thing
right,
with the...
Change.
Yeah, that's not, that can't be a thing. Of the many things it can be, it, that is one it can't be.
And I think we made,
I mean,
an
we
improvement.
Can say, well, I mean, there it was a parody of American Ninja Warrior and some right, other reality competition shows.
Which incidentally.
And it was, but like with a crazy twist and weird constraints.
Well yeah, so we. Well,
and stuntmen.
This is one mm-hmm, of those things where we throw ideas up on a board and then when episode ideas get filled in and we see that we've got two ideas that we wanted to do left over and there's one episode left, we put them into the same episode. That's all that will happen.
Yeah, that was,
it was
a bit.
We want to have a reality show parody of like American Ninja Warrior, and we want to have an episode where we don't speak to each other. So we originally put them together, which incidentally, then when we were shooting the our flashback episode, every morning in Santa Clarita, we passed the Ultimate Beastmaster.
Right. Yeah,
that's
we
what
did.
That huge thing right, was, which was another one of our references, the right, Netflix Sly Stallone produced, you know, American Ninja Warrior ripoff.
So what you're saying is we could have shot
just
on their actual
gone
set.
Into
we
the
should have
Ultimate
gone down
Beastmaster.
There.
Yeah.
I think we would have been fined, because you almost got fined just wandering around.
Yes, I did. I almost got fined, and it was—I almost was fined, and it was not funny. It wasn't like I was almost.
Was
fined.
It a guy on a horse? Because there were horses around.
It was the modern version of a horse, in that it was a gator. It was a low torque, very yes, expensive. I asked him how much. I was like, how much is one of the, you know? Because
you're
driving.
To divert him from the fine with.
Let's talk about your gator.
Yeah, like how much does one of those things run you? You know, like. How much does that cost?
You're backing away slowly.
Yeah, he's like $20,000. I'm like, wow, that's an expensive piece of equipment. Yes, I was almost fine.
My mom has one of those.
Really?
Well, she's a high roller.
Oh, she is.
Well, it's pretty low to the ground.
Yeah, so we were at her husband. We were at the movie ranch, basically.
Right. And you're not allowed to wander, and wander is the technical term.
Right.
It wasn't. That's not just a word I'm using to describe it. It's wander.
That's what it says on the sign.
That's right. You cannot wander, and I needed to scout the location of the opening shot of that. You know, of that flashback. And so I wandered. I had to go and wander. And I didn't really think about it. It wasn't like I was like, oh, I'm going to be contrary and, you know, and wander. You know, I'm going to be rebellious and, you know, flaunt the rules. Is that, I don't think that's flaunt, I think is the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
The rules. We were working quickly and I needed to go scout.
Yeah, right.
So I did. And there was I come down the mountain and there's a guy with that classic, you're in trouble smile, you know, the classic, like,
I'm going to find you.
Yeah. Like that. And he didn't have to say anything because he's got the smile on his face that says you're in trouble. And I'm like, what am I? Like, this is what? Like,
but you got off, right?
Well, there was a 24-hour discussion about it, actually, because I was super nice. I was like, you know, I was like, hey, listen, I'm sorry. Like, right off the bat, I'm coming down the mountain, and I'm like, I am sorry. I know. I'm not supposed to be wandering. And you know that I'm not supposed to be wandering because you're here to catch me. Like, you caught me.
Right, yeah.
Like, I don't know how you caught me, but clearly, you know, I mean, I guess I could have said, hey, I got permission, but there was no radio from locations to them, so they knew whatever. So
I mean, this is a big source of revenue. This is like a small town cop catching it. This is like a speed trap.
It was $100.
Right? Yeah, right.
That's not small.
Yeah.
That's $100 cash for walking, you know,
for
200 yards off the you know, the designated area.
And that's on you because it was on the call sheet. I'm not paying you $100.
Yes, right? And on the bathroom door.
It was everywhere.
Yeah, it was everywhere.
I did read it on the call sheet. I don't know what, I don't usually read the call sheets, but I read that and I was like, kind of laughed to myself and I was like,
what's that
like
mean?
Like that would ever happen.
Who's going to wander?
Right. And you know, we almost, you know, where you guys did, remember when we were in the riverbed? I don't know how much we can describe, but when that very last shot, all ran to the riverbed.
Yeah.
That was almost a company fine. That was like an en masse wander.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because we were losing light and the location we chose was not going to work because it was 200, we were losing light and it was, the place we had chosen for that was under trees.
Got
it was all
dark.
Under the canopies. Yeah, couldn't do it. So we're like, oh, and so then we just ran over to the riverbed and there was a massive scramble and then, I don't know, you guys were maybe changing. You guys were changing because you had to get into the change. And
right.
I went over to the same guy. I hope his name's Pete because that's my memory. And I said, we need to wander over there at the creek bed. And he was like, looks like you already have.
Oops.
Pete.
Mm-hmm. I know. And I was like, and I apologize for that. I really do. I'm not trying
Again,
to.
Again, I'm.
Now tell me again how much that gator is. Yeah. What is one of the, can we still talk about that?
Yeah, and you know, I-
You got
know,
out of it twice though?
Well, this time, I got out of it twice. The first time, I could see being like the, hey, I'm just gonna make this all in good fun, did not work. Mm-hmm. Because I was saying it was 24 hours that, you know, they came to me later and said, you still might be fine. Because I was trying to be all jocular. Like when I came to mom, I was like, oh, I'm so sorry, I-
Yeah.
I wandered. That's all just a joke, isn't it? I'm going back to our location. So sorry. Yeah. That did not fly with that guy because he went on to maybe find me. And so then the second approach was be very serious about it. Yeah. Very serious and professional. Listen, I'm sorry.
And penitent.
I was. Like, and no joking
one
around.
One knee, both knees.
The whole maybe. Thing. Like not, hey, I'm going to make light of this stupid rule, but hey, aren't we just friends and isn't this a funny rule? That's it's
right,
not.
Right, right.
It's not funny. And so then, yes, I worked him in that way and that worked. I was like, listen.
But both of them. Yeah. I'm sorry, I cut you off.
Yeah, no,
you
said, no, no, no.
Both of them, great shots, yeah. Right?
Yes.
You got that establishing shot. That was the first wander when you got the establishing, right?
Yep.
Or you were looking for
it. Yeah, that's where you guys come down. Oh,
that's one of the biggest
with the zoom
shots.
Lens.
Yeah, with that big, giant lens, yeah. With the classic.
Oh,
yeah,
that's the classic. That's the biggest shot of the whole thing, maybe.
Probably.
It's and, that. And then you got the night, well, I mean, it, let's see, the creek bed closer.
The creek bed closer was really that was, good because that was
like an act two closer type thing.
Because
right,
it was turned out to be a location that looks really crazy and almost like on another planet.
Yeah,
like it was very craggy,
Star
Trek. Yeah, it was very Star Trek-y. Like, yeah. And so then when you guys revealed yourselves in that location,
yeah, we were very down and out.
Yeah.
We were up the creek.
Right.
Am I right?
It's true.
A very dry creek.
Now one of the things that we were talking about was you know we Link and I carpooled together. Out to our location in Pomona, where we shot most of our stuff out in Pomona. And so we'd talk on the way and talk on the way back. And, you know, it kind of hit us a few weeks in that we were like, now what's different than season one? Because I feel like we're working harder. We're like, I just feel a lot more tired. I remember coming home in season one, even though we were working 12-hour days and telling my wife, I was like, this acting thing is nice. This is, these guys got it easy. I was like, this acting thing is like, you know, I was really nervous about it, but, you know, I'm not saying necessarily good at it, but I'm saying it's not, it doesn't really tire you out unless you're doing like a Revenant thing and you're like
right.
DiCaprio, like jumping off cliffs and stuff like that.
But, which we did none of.
Right, but we were trying to figure out what is it about this season? We're like, well, maybe it's, you know, maybe this was pretty ambitious for 33 days.
Yeah.
You know, so season one, 29-day shoot, 14-minute episodes, going to 22-minute episodes, we're going up at least 50% in content, but we're also, I think, scenes per minute, you know, scenes per episode or whatever, way up, like just the pacing. And that was something that came, you know, that was a kind of Michael and Sievert pushing us to keep the pacing up more so than we did in season one.
It's great. So, all this is great for the final product, but extremely ambitious for the parameters we had in terms of time and money.
Right.
Yeah.
And you there's no way you could have fully appreciated what we were throwing you into when we started this thing.
I did not fully appreciate it.
But although you did mention it several times.
I did.
This is what I would see. This is what I would hear in your voice and see on your face. There was you would say things like, now, this is really ambitious. But then I could hear in your voice, you're like, but of course, I mean, we're gonna get more days. We're gonna get more money. You believed that was gonna happen.
I did.
And that did.
I did.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. Well, maybe not necessarily more days, but I didn't actually realize that not a single minute of overtime would be allowed. And that's not an exaggeration either when I say single minute. I actually mean
it's pretty hardcore.
Not a single minute. And I actually, as you could tell, rebelled against that greatly for the first week or two because I actually couldn't conceive of a world where one single minute of overtime could be the collapse of the season. And so I was like, oh, I have to adjust because I have there is no fail safe. An extra 20 minutes, say, would be, enjoyable, no buffer. And so, I had to adjust to that, I think. But the thing that I always keep in mind when I'm doing anything, and certainly with this show, is we have to achieve it. I know it's kind of an obvious thing to say. We have to achieve it because no one's going to know nor care what we faced, nor tried. You know, what we tried to, what goals we set. Once it's right. in, when once it starts getting cut and it turns into episodes, no one cares.
No one cares.
We could say we literally, this entire thing took place on the moon. We actually were the first, you know, movie production or television production to actually fly to the moon, create an atmosphere on the moon, and then shoot a comedy series on the moon, and then we came back. People would be like, oh, great. It's, yeah, it's not so funny.
Right. Like,
you know, so it's like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You have to achieve it. And so then, you know, I always keep that in mind so that we can, you know, we can try and, you know, create something great every day. And I thought that you guys, can we compliment you on it? Your own podcast? Is that a thing without it just seeming too obsequious?
No one's done it before.
You guys are super prepared. You know, like you got, it's good you drove together to the set because there's no, I mean, you guys were putting away 2 and 3 pages in an hour sometimes, you know, and that's just not a thing I experience in other shoots and other shows because, you know, you have either have a little bit more time or whatever, but if you guys didn't actually know everything you were going to do pretty much all the time, we wouldn't have made it. And so that's really a testament to your hard work. I mean, I was amazed. And that's why I kept saying the last couple of days, like, they're going to bail us out of this one. We have 10 seconds. They're going to bail us. Don't worry that we got this. As long as I put up the cameras, then we'll get something because you guys were ready for it. And I was impressed by that. I was impressed that you were ready for it.
Sometimes it was fun to know that we just had 10 minutes and we were going to try to get 2 setups. So we had one take at this thing from each setup. So then it was like, you know, because I mean, to stay so aggressively on point. It's like, okay, I can't flub a line, and I want to hit these marks type thing.
Right.
Like,
you
that was fun. A few times that was fun.
Right. I mean, you actually couldn't flub a line. Like that's how that we were in situations where.
Right.
You actually couldn't flub a line. Well,
and I think that's
not once.
We talk about that all the time, and I think this is just rooted in being executive producers and creators on the show and kind of feeling the weight of, like, when we say there's no overtime, it's like we're saying there's no overtime, right? And so it's not us against them. We have to kind of put ourselves on both sides of the line. And so that we always say, don't be the problem, be the solution, right?
Right.
Where I think a lot of actors, you know, just almost instinctively, it's like, They're gonna be the problem, right? That's somebody you super talented and has
because they have to do good work.
Yeah,
they have to do their thing really well.
There's a natural give and take, right?
And they should, and you know, if you're really great at that, you've earned the right to create a ripple effect of problems that as producers, you start to appreciate how it ripples through everything, and then it costs X number of dollars. And so we know that intimately. So it's not that I'm saying that I would think normal actors would be annoying. I haven't worked with that many, but yeah, we never feel like we're actors. We're something else that then we have to act to pull it off as part of it.
We're acting because we have to do it.
Yeah.
Right? I feel like that's what's like, whoa, we gotta make this. Well, we gotta be in it. Which that means we have to act as well. Oh, okay. We gotta figure out how to do that. But we definitely can't be the source of the problem.
It's not that we don't want to act.
No.
It's not.
No.
We want to act in it, but we're never fully actors. I think with the pressure of time, we were always thinking about 3 other things at the same time.
The final
one of
product,
which is, how quickly do I need to get this? Don't be the problem.
The whole thing is what is in view most of the time.
Yeah.
And acting is a part of it, right? Finishing on time is a part of it.
Sure, but you have to be good sports too, because there were times where, you know, because actors, you know, you need space to kind of do it right and do it well, right? So there were times where, despite the fact that you had your executive producer hats on, sometimes it was just like, life isn't fair, guys. Like, life isn't fair to any of us, you know,
right.
We have to just put it away. So that was good that you guys were good sports about it, because it is still something that's important and you want to do it well and it should be funny or it should be good and you don't, and it also can't be wasted, you know, it can't not work. So.
And I mean, part of the fun of acting is discovery. And sometimes that doesn't happen until you're actually doing it.
I mean,
we're so calculated and we worked so hard at every step that we were intimately acquainted and we had certain expectations of ourselves and each other and everybody else in the scene and even you. And So it's more of, we got to execute what we expect, but there's a lot of fun in discovering something like a different angle or how to tie two shots together or a nuance to an accent or just perform in a different way. Right. Like, oh, this is a lot funnier than we thought because I'm crying now. I didn't think I was going to be crying. Or I thought crying would be funny, but now it's not. So I think because it was so aggressive, I certainly missed that experience of like figuring it out. Because what would happen, like if I'm to overgeneralize the thing, we would work really hard on a scene, you get it done, and then immediately be like, all right, next scene. And then we would go and it would you'd physically move over just the actors and producers and you, and we would rehearse. And that was a fun moment, but it was very high pressure because there wasn't much time allotted for it. But the rehearsal was the time when you block it out. Where are you gonna step? Where are you gonna walk? What are you gonna say? How are we gonna say it? We're saying the lines and we're seeing who laughs at what in the room, but we're not even given a full performance yet. We're given, because you wanna save it, you give like a half performance, but you gotta give enough to like have proof of concept or that something, make sure something's not broken or needs to be fixed. And then, but it's when everybody's making decisions, like DP's making lighting decisions, mood decisions, you're making all these cut angle camera decisions, directorial decisions, where blocking, all this stuff. Everybody's making all these instantaneous decisions, pop, 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 all at once. And it's like, okay, and we need to be done with it. But it is so that we can just shoot it.
Right.
But that is a fun moment because I'm trying to think of an example, but you don't really know if it's gonna work. It, like, that's a big moment. Or when you have someone come in, it's like Garrett Morris, a legend, comes in from the first season of Saturday Night Live. And like, I knew this, I have images of this guy in my brain from like the earliest memories of comedy. It's like, this guy's a part of it.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he strolls onto the set, and first time you see him in action is this rehearsal when it's like, all right, is he going 50%? Is he going 90%? And this is true of everybody.
Right.
And so then you're assessing like, all right, what's he gonna give us? Is it gonna be great? Is it gonna be horrible? Is it gonna be somewhere in the middle? So you're like discovering all that, knowing that, 20 minutes later, after you've rehearsed, they bring in the cameras and they set up the lights and everything else and the props are set and everything. You're gonna do it no matter what. It's like you've jumped off the cliff and you better hope that squirrel suit unfurls.
But for you, I mean, the whole process is obviously something that you've been involved in for a long time, but the limitations.
How much did we mess it up for you?
The limitations that you usually don't have these limitations, like, because you did us a solid in saying yes, you'll work on this based on your level of experience and the size of the projects you've done before. So you talk a little bit about like recognizing those limitations and like how has that changed the way you think about directing at all?
Oh yeah, I mean, to me, well, the main thing I had to remember was to have fun. Like I'd be in a situation where it's like, I have to change the way I work in order to make sure that we execute properly, and then I'd get all mad at myself or mad at everyone, and then I'd have to realize that this is deeply crazy what we're doing, and therefore it should only be fun all the time. Otherwise, why even stand where I'm standing? So I had to, that was first. So like, okay, just remember that this all should be kind of fun. I mean, on a technical level, I started thinking about lenses differently, because what is the best frame if you don't get two of them? If you don't get two sizes, what's the best frame in any particular situation? I know it's probably, this is what I'm about to say is like the cure for insomnia for most of your listeners.
Give it to me. I'm interested in this.
Well, lenses are a big thing. When you get to cover things and you have 3 hours to shoot a three-page scene versus 45 minutes, how best to cover it and what are the ways in which, when you have that much time, you can shoot it many, many ways and you get lots of coverage and you get lots of angles. And, so I had to figure out how to kind of efficiently shoot something and still make it good and still make it funny, or at least funny in the lens. You guys were you guys were funny and great, and so I had to figure out, you know how to best capture it, because you can't be too wide, you can't be too tight. It has to kind of, you have to, yeah, you know, tell the story visually. So that I'd say I learned some stuff. You know, gags are gags, though. To me, that didn't change. You could probably see my like, I always got a lot more, you know, I don't know, whatever, intense when we were doing gags as opposed to scenes. Because when you guys are, you know, when the floor is yours and you guys are doing character work and being funny and it's in dialogue, you can cover that a bunch of different ways. It's going to be great.
Right.
When you're doing gags are really specific. They need very specific shots. If you don't have those specific shots, the gags don't work.
Right.
Period. So I would always get more kind of intense, you probably noticed, when we were shooting gags, because they have to be shot properly.
And we had a lot of them. We had a lot of gags.
14,000, I think. 1,470 gags. And it was great, but that was great. So those have to be shot well. Those just have to be shot well. So
speaking of which, shall we talk about the Texas switch?
Yes.
Because to me, that's like...
That's my favorite.
That's like the vanity bumper sticker of Buddy System Season 2 is Texas switch.
Switch.
Take the vowels out and you make it into a vanity license plate.
Yeah. Right. Just
SWCH.
You could put the T in there.
Yeah, you could. I have to go back to what I just said for a second and say, please cut that all out.
What?
I don't know. Well, because it seems very boring, doesn't it? Like it seems.
No.
Really
no. The mythical beast, man.
Choosing the lens?
They care about
it. So boring.
They care about it.
Really?
Yeah, they're all creative-minded people.
Yeah, well then they're maybe
and aspiring directors.
Many of them.
And current directors.
Ooh.
We got it all, baby.
All right.
I had never heard the term Texas switch until you said it 4,000 times. But it's our fault. Because there's a lot of prop gags.
Right.
So it's, explain it.
Okay, so the Texas switch.
To me again, because I still don't understand.
Well, and then there's that. Remember, there's also the Hollywooded Inn, which is a kind of variation of the Texas switch.
Let's use a specific example as a case study. Do you remember a Texas switch that we can talk about? We can talk about any of them. I don't care.
So okay, Texas switch.
We had one.
This is one of those situations where we had a gag we were trying to get with the soup.
Right.
So we've got the box that has the food in it, and I bring it in. And
I didn't think that's the one we ever wanted to talk about, though.
And I do my...
So hard to shoot.
Well, but I treat it very... You know, roughly, and we set it down, and you open it up, and it's a perfectly steaming, hot bowl of soup.
Right.
Liquid in a bowl that can't sustain being flipped around in a cardboard box.
So I come in with an empty cardboard box, set it down, Texas switch, bring in the one with the soup in it and open it up. That's a Texas switch.
That's right.
It just means that you keep rolling, but then in the edit, it can mean anything. It means you cut to another shot.
Yeah, right. You cut to another shot, and then when you cut back, the thing that you wanted switched in.
I guess in like a theatrical setting, it's like, hey, look at me over here while some stagehand over here replaces mine with his, and now there's blood in that.
Don't do that.
It's like a visual sleight of hand, if you will.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we had to Hollywood in the soup, right?
Which
was also a Texas switch. You know, someone out there will have to kind of clarify, because there is Hollywooding something in,
Hollywood is just a janky way to like the non-technical way to get something in its place.
Right.
Right? Like that could be someone's just holding
like a bounce.
Putting on a stand.
You're going to let a grip hold the bounce, or are you going to put it on a C-stand?
Right.
So if the grip is holding the bounce, they're Hollywooding it in. That's what I always thought.
Because I think it means that in Hollywood, you can afford to just have a person hold that as opposed to prop it up against something. Right? But in Texas, you got to switch it out.
Yeah, right. In Texas,
So Hollywood in something is a broad term, but Texas switch is a narrower term, which we used many times for prop gags.
Yeah, and Hollywooded Inn has too many syllables, and it also is not as fun to say as Texas switch, which has a very clear, like, you know, idea behind it, right? Which everyone gets instantly. Like, you get what that is. Let's do that. You know, like right away.
Yes.
Yeah.
But now the real fun starts. I mean, we're gonna have our rap party here in just a little bit.
Yep.
And then you're gonna get in there in the editing bay.
Yeah,
very soon.
I looked at episode 2 today.
Oh, you did?
My notes are being done in episode 2 right now.
Oh, really?
All right. Yes. Well, tell us it's fine if you say this because our expectation. I mean, whenever we see first edits and we try to protect who sees it so that we both don't see it at the same time, so someone can have a preserved first look at something that's further along.
Is that how you do it?
Like yeah.
You won't look at it at the same time.
We try to ideally
have,
no.
Somebody wants to have a fresh perspective. Yeah.
Okay.
To be like, okay, I thought this. Let me see if he thinks this.
But we're used to first cuts of anything there being that let down. Like, oh, I feel disappointed.
We've never been encouraged by a first cut of anything. Sketch, music, video.
So it's okay if you tell us that now.
We're always like,
How did you actually feel?
Well, I have that problem too. Like, I'll say, like, what was the point of any of this, you know? But you know, but it's not personal, right? It's not anything I've ever seen. Yeah,
I totally get it.
I'll make a sandwich and feel that way. You know, like, I'll make a sandwich. I'll look at my sandwich and I'll say, well, that's not in my, you know, like my idea of this whole operation was that some perfect thing was going to emerge, and now it's just a sandwich. So
can somebody text us switch in a better sandwich?
Yeah, like you have to get past that, and so you have. That's all just stuff like in your head. So you have to just.
So what happened? So how much of it you saw? The majority of episode 2?
I thoroughly enjoyed episode 2. I thought it was really, really funny. And first I looked to make sure that I got all the shots I need to make it, you know, like I live in fear of that, right? Like, oh, we better have this shot because to me, this shot is what's going to be crucial to, you know, making it good. So I'm out with the editor. I'm like, I'm always like, go there. I want to just stream.
You were over his shoulder.
Yeah. I went over there and I just said, I want to see all these beats and I want to see what shots I have just to see if these
after
crucial
seeing
shots,
the cut. Like you sat there and watched it.
Yeah. And then I was like, I want to know that we have all these crucial shots to me will make it 40,000 times funnier. And when most of those shots I got, I felt good about that. And then you know, performance is good. And it make, you know, cause I'm like, does this make sense?
Is this the Michael McDonald episode?
No, this is the Glenn episode.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, like that crazy day when we had 14 seconds to shoot that big set piece at the end. Like, is that going to work?
Right.
You know, like, how is that? That's the whole point of the episode. That's the whole big deal. Like, if that doesn't work, the episode, yes, that was great. I was like, watch the end scene first. Like, let's work backwards.
Watch the scene you're most nervous about first.
Yeah, and then, like, there were things that really work. I don't know. I can't really say things, right? You're not supposed to say things.
Well, you can indicate so that we know.
The diner? Can I say diner?
Yeah,
that scene is... Yeah, that whole sequence from the moment you enter the diner to that end of that
phrase,
and then where you go. That's all.
Okay. Oh yeah,
tremendous.
And that was a difficult day.
Yes,
it was a difficult day getting what we needed.
Yes, it was. It was tremendously difficult, and it is tremendous.
The basement stuff,
amazing.
Oh yeah,
amazing. Yeah, it's amazing. Wow. Okay. It's extraordinary.
Whoa.
It's extraordinary.
Extraordinary?
Yes, it's extraordinary. And the diner itself is kind of the whole setup to that is pretty extraordinary too.
What about my pants joke? Is that still in?
Pants joke?
Putting on your pants one.
Yes, that's in. Yes, it is. That's
you didn't cut that yet?
No.
I'm fond of that.
I did not.
Try not to cut it.
And are we going to be short? Are we good? Are we good on
that episode's good on time? Yeah. I mean, most of them are long. That's actually closest. Okay. That episode is closest to time.
Okay.
So yeah, if you cut a lot, then you'll be short.
Okay.
Because it's closest to time.
Because that was the thing. That was the thing I was worried about because you know, our AD Jill kept coming back and saying. This is all just too ambitious. We're not going to make our days. You guys got to cut more stuff. And so, you know, Michael and Sievert would go and make proposed cuts, and pages and pages and pages continue to come out of the script as we moved along. Mm-hmm. And we just kept thinking, we got to be too short. But okay, we're not going to.
No, most of the episodes are probably long.
Okay,
which is great. Yeah, I mean, in that way.
I'm so excited. By the way, I mean, these are proper episodes versus. Season 1 was just like webisodes that made up a movie, which was I'm proud of what it is, but as an experience for the audience, what do you predict is your favorite episode?
I mean, certainly the one we talked about, the one that might be your favorite episode is certainly up there.
Episode 7.
Yeah, episode
so like the big
6, yeah.
Episode 6, yeah.
6 is up there.
People are going to love it because it's such a left turn. It's such a, I mean, it's crazy different. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a period piece.
Yeah.
Yeah, but where you're not talking to each other, That one has...
That's interesting.
That's pretty... I mean, where it goes is so... It just exponent... It takes these exponential leaps. Like these exponential leaps.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, like the... To me, what made me think maybe it was going to be my favorite episode is when the character Dylan makes that proposal. He comes out of the bathroom.
Right. And it's like, what? Hold on, wait. What? You talk about a left turn.
Right. And he's like, okay, I see this in a way that not only no one else in the whole universe could see, but certainly not the audience. And I see it very clearly, and that's going to be the next move. And that's a great move. It's a pretty great move. So that one I'm interested in.
They don't know what we're talking about.
No, they don't.
They can wait.
No,
they can wait.
Right. Yeah.
I tend to forget about the music because it was like, but I mean, that reggae thing we shot on the last day looked so great.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to be.
That's going to be cool.
Yeah. My hope is that when you watch an episode, it's one of those, I want people to feel like when they finish watching an episode, they think back to the beginning of the episode and it feels like how we felt when we were shooting. Like whenever we were shooting, it was like, I remember what we shot at the beginning of this day and it doesn't feel like the same day because we're shooting so much and like we're working so hard. But even from a viewing experience, I think story-wise, that'll translate. It's like at the end of an episode, they'll think about the first of the episode and be like, that can't be the same episode.
Yeah.
And then they'll be like, I remember there was a song like in like the middle of the episode, but that feels like a different episode too. It's like...
Right.
Yeah.
I think we take people on a great journey.
Big adventure. And I'm interested to see how the characters that you guys created, how they evolve over the 8 episodes. In terms of like...
Especially because we block shot the whole thing and I have no...
Yeah, like what your characters believe at the beginning and what your characters believe at the end.
I trust the writing.
I trust the writing too.
From an acting standpoint, it was difficult to plug back in. Like we shot all the scenes in the dining room. So it's like the call sheet would be like episode 1, episode 4, episode 8, episode 4, 8, 1, and we'd shoot it in that order.
Yep.
But I mean, as much as we do change...
Yeah, I think you guys do change.
We do change.
Physically.
But at least our accents don't change, because then that would have been really bad.
Right.
Except for that one day.
Oh,
new character on the fly.
Oh, yeah, that was fun.
You heard about that. You weren't there, but you heard subsequently.
I was getting changed.
Yes.
I was like, gosh.
That was a good move.
It was a good move. I mean, it's good to have people here. I mean, here's the story. Rhett and I both had characters that we were playing independently that were basically going to be cut together. At a certain sequence. And we kind of conceptualized the character that I played and then yours, where I wasn't in the room for that. I wasn't in the room when you conceptualized the Cajun guy, but I was supposed to be a Southern gentleman.
Yeah, and we thought that they were different enough.
And you were to be a Cajun guy.
They weren't.
But then when we rehearsed it, like the more that you were the Cajun guy, I was like, I feel like this is messing with my mind. I can't be here, so I left. I couldn't listen to you doing your character anymore because it was messing with my character. So then I went off the whole time you were shooting it, and I was like rehearsing the freaking Southern gentleman. Meanwhile, I didn't look like a Southern gentleman. They made me look amazing and very funny.
But you never never left the East Coast.
And that's a lesson. Right. That was a lesson learned that I should have assessed that the moment
I looked.
The Northeast Coast, that's right.
Like once you put on hair and makeup and costume, like that's the moment, like you gotta reassess everything in the mirror. And that was a mistake I made, I'll own that. But I think the thing was, so then I was off rehearsing this Southern gentleman, and then I show up after you left, and I knew in my heart of hearts I thought it was too close. But I wasn't willing to say anything because I didn't wanna be the problem. And then, Steve, you weren't there, so Stevie and Steve were over at the monitor with their backs turned to me, watching. I'm watching them watch me on the monitor out of the corner of my eye. That's so true. I'm performing to the right of lens, and over here I can see their backs, and they're like, stop, 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 stop.
You know something's coming.
Yeah,
Stevie and Steve are huddling.
Yeah. Stevie's
the one who called. She's
learned how to. She knows when she can come in and correct. Correct.
It's
course.
A precarious
yeah,
spot.
It
we,
is.
We depend on to, her for that.
Yeah, she I mean, had to make it, a big. That was a bold move.
Right.
It was the last day, but the two of you conferred, and you were like, "The characters are too similar. They sound too similar." And I was like, well, they're from the same place. They knew each other years back.
Please accept that.
Please, yeah. And then you were like, yeah, he doesn't look like he talks. And you guys were talking about it. And I was like, all right. So, I mean, I have no clue. I never looked in a mirror. If we had time, I'd have been like, all right, give me 30 minutes. Let me go in front of a mirror again.
We don't have 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So then I just did some different stuff on camera. And I was like,
it's fantastic.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean,
it wasn't the most pivotal thing in such a crazy episode that I'm not concerned about it.
Right.
But I think the main takeaway was you got people you put in place to be able to redirect and override and shape something. And you got to trust those people. And that's what we hired you for. And you more than earned that trust after, you know, a few days of working together.
Yeah.
So then by the last day, it was like, I just wanted to be able to pull my weight and take the direction. But I never questioned whether you guys were right. And you know, we got longstanding track record with Stevie and that certainly helped. But I mean, even if it was you saying that just alone, it was like, I would have totally trusted. But I was like, okay, I can't blow this. I've gotta change this character. I gotta change this character entirely.
How many characters did you do? Do you know? I lost count after a while.
I don't know how many characters, but we discovered that I had 58 costume changes and Link had 60 costume changes. So
at least 20% of those were different characters.
Yeah, and so eight episodes of television, which is just stupid. It's just so I don't know how many. I feel like I kind of exhausted my accent ability. I mean, the Cajun accent was not really. I mean, I was going off of what I'd seen on Swamp People. It wasn't really Cajun. There wasn't any French in there. It was like,
I don't know because I wasn't there. Get me out of here because I don't want it to mess me up.
Yeah, you were just kind of like, I'm off the ledge on this one. You know, like it was just like. Yeah.
Well, you looked.
I had a few root words that I kept going back to.
Yeah, you just cracked. And I liked that because it was the end of the shoot. And I'm like, okay, that, you know, because all of them were really cohesive, you know, up until that point.
Yeah,
you know, and then it was just like, okay, this is good because it's completely cracked open. This is all going the way it should go.
And then we immediately ran to hair and makeup and we turned into 80s hair metal.
Which we know that well. We know that well.
Well, that was your comfort zone.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I'm gonna have to cut this short, guys, because I got to go to the doctor and figure out what's wrong with me and if I'm dying or not. Not to.
Let's hope that.
I believe
the verdict is not.
You have
right?
a sore throat.
Yeah.
Let's just tell us at the rap party that everything's okay.
Well, I might not be able to speak. I might be on vocal rest at the rap party, and I'll bring a sign.
Yeah,
and put
a sign
on my chest.
And you could do this. Are you doing the mustache? What's gonna happen? Are you gonna help him out and shave, and then that will? Right.
Just point at it and be like, he was gonna shave that. Talk about that.
What's the question?
Are you gonna shave the mustache?
Yes.
He's gonna shave.
Well, there you go.
But this is the last thing with the mustache.
This is it.
Yeah, within an hour it's gonna be gone. And I'll have my wife back.
But
did I say wife? I meant life.
Oh gosh. Well, man, it was a privilege to work with you.
Likewise.
This is like Link said, we would have enjoyed to be able to kind of stop and reflect and just carry on a friendship throughout, even though we did. But it was very much work, just like Rihanna.
But it was totally worth it. And it still was a great experience, but it was tough.
It's nice.
I'm exhausted.
And now the friendship begins.
I think, right? Yeah. We can start. It's nice that you're saying that we're friends. Like when you said that to me in the trailer, I was shocked, you know, that you were like, we consider you a friend. I'm like, oh man, it's a big moment just snuck up on me. Because I was saying to my wife.
Well, when you go through a near-death experience together, I mean, that's the best
way to. That's the thing. But yeah, I said to my wife in preparation, you know, I was like, I don't know what I'm going to say on this podcast and all that. And I was like, because I don't think we've had like this long a conversation ever. Like our longest conversation prior to this one was what you mentioned before is when we met.
Right.
And we got to talk for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And then that was it. And then, yeah, I think we had the Desert Island thing, and then
We had the car thing. You told me about your car.
Oh, right. That was nice. I was like, wow, the subject matter is not that interesting, but the fact that we're actually talking
real
about
conversation,
something.
Man.
Yeah, that was nice.
No,
that part
I was pretty
nice.
Interested
yeah,
in the
yeah.
car.
Yeah, so I'm happy to have.
We'll talk about the car when you come back.
Yes.
Because our friendship will only be conducted on our podcast.
Right. I that's good.
No. This is a form of stopping and celebrating, and I am trying to, like you said, you try to be aware, and I am wrapping this up because I know you got to go to the doctor. Just leave. Yeah. We'll keep talking.
No, really. I can tell that's what's in your eyes right now.
Right. I actually went around the bases again after he said, let's wrap it up. So that's on me.
Stopping and celebrating. I feel like this is a component of that, to reflect on what we made together. And it's important. And like the wrap party, it's important. We're going to go with everybody who we made this thing with. And, you know, if it's the last time you see some of those people, hopefully it won't be. But it's like, at least we commemorated it.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
That's what we're going to do.
So that's what you're saying. But we're never going to see each other again after the wrap party.
Our friendship will continue. As well as our working relationship.
Thanks for having me. It was great fun. Thanks for
for listening. We're not going to have another wrap up other than this. We're just going to toast.
Here it is.
Come back next week for another Ear Biscuit. To hear this Ear Biscuit in its entirety so you don't miss a thing, follow the links in the description to Art19, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else podcasts are available.
To watch more Ear Biscuits, click the video on the left.
To watch more from This Is Mythical, click the video on the right.
And don't forget to subscribe by clicking the circular icon.
Thanks for being your mythical best.